This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Welcome this evening, folks. We are on Dystopical with a very special guest. I thought I'd throw
she's
that
right in. Not that special.
I thought I'd throw that right in, introduce you very early on.
I'm your interstate star. That's
right. We have an interstate star this evening.
Blah, blah, blah.
Katie East, welcome again to the show.
Thank you for having me again, girls. Thank you.
And always, Kat, hello.
Hi.
Hi, Kat.
Hi.
So this evening we have a rather special show for you. I'm almost embarrassed to be talking
no,
to you.
No, she's not almost embarrassed. She's actually really embarrassed, which is part of the reason why we're doing this show.
Basically.
Just so that we can watch Farine blush.
Pretty much. That was.
Oh my God, she's blushing now.
And squirming. Yeah. All these amazing things. All right, so Dystopical is a debate and a reflection on what matters to queer women in our community. On tonight's show, we are talking about...
Do you want me to say it?
Drum roll, please.
We're talking about the female orgasm.
That's right. We're talking about the female orgasm.
Oh, my God. She said it. That's one.
I thought I'd warm myself into this. We'll be talking about the history of the orgasm, all that sort of research, the important bits and pieces of your...
the bits and pieces.
Yeah,
we're talking about the anatomy of the orgasm.
I was going to say the important bits and pieces of your anatomy, what you should get to know if you don't know already, and various other interesting tips, right?
Mm-hmm. We've got Katie's top 10 list, of course.
As always. Okay. So if you want to weigh in or share your tips or anything else, you can text us at 0427 Joy 949. You can Facebook us at Dystopical. That's DYSTOPICAL. Or email us at dear.dystopical@gmail.com. All right. Well, we're back in a sec.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Dystopical.
That was if you get the name of the show, right.
So first up, we had Seven Nation Army, which got Farin dancing in the studio. Mm. That was Nostalgia 77 featuring Alice Russell, who is an awesome artist. And then we had Get Some from Licky Lee's first album.
And now
to the order of business.
Now to the order of business. I'm going to record how many times tonight that Farin actually says the word orgasm.
Uh-huh,
starting with now.
Okay, so we're talking about the history of orgasms, right?
It's really cute. I wish everyone could see how much you're blushing.
I almost brought my video camera in tonight so I can film this.
Okay, for those of you that said it three times now.
For those of you that aren't familiar with the show, Fran's a bit of a prude. So part of the reason we're doing this topic tonight is just to see how much she can cope with. So the topic is the female orgasm, and you're listening to Dystopical on
Joy 94.9. That's Licky Lee's second album that it was off, not the first album. Sorry about that.
Okay.
Thanks, Nikki.
Anyway, moving on to the orgasm.
The orgasm is from the Greek word orgasmos, which means Catherine Ann... to swell and be excited.
Yeah, I was going to say that.
She was looking at the wrong sheet.
Give me a moment.
The best thing about an orgasm is the fact that we are actually allowed to talk about these things these days. It used to be a really taboo subject, which is where a bit of my research has come from.
Especially the female orgasm.
Very much so. There was this great guy called Kinsey, and in the late 1940s, early 50s, he actually did some research. He bought out two books. And it was a book about the male and a book about the female. And in his book in the 40s, it was revealed that over 80% of women masturbated and had clitoral orgasms.
That's really not much of a shock.
It's not, but in the 1940s it was.
But they probably had never counted this stuff before.
Well, this is it.
Or had done research on it.
So. Well, this is it. There was a bit of dispute with his research because a lot of the people that volunteered for the research had served or were serving prison sentences. Mm. If I was in prison, I'd be masturbating a hell of a lot more than I would be on the outside.
Well, that's saying something.
So there was, there's
also probably different ethics at right now than yeah, it used to definitely. Be around, like, using, you know, prisoners as subjects of
That's
sex
right.
research.
Well, there was a lot of debate over whether or not it covered the general population, mm. but he actually did a study. I think it was around about 6,000 people. So, I mean, it was a fair-sized study for
6,000 women, yeah.
For those that time. So, and then in the 50s, there was some more research done, and that revealed that women could actually achieve multiple orgasms.
Groundbreaking stuff.
It really was. It was.
Well, look, it's not like individual women haven't known this, you know, over the years, but there is something extremely psychologically comforting about knowing that you're not the only person.
Well, this is true, but then you've got to think about the time. Okay, so the 50s, everyone was quite prudish, like Freyne, and, you know, these subjects weren't really talked about, and so, you know, women didn't get around like we do and say, hey,
what?
No, not around like we do, like sit around and talk about things like, you know, we do these days. Later on in the 70s, there was this awesome woman. I did a lot of reading on her in the last couple of days. Her name's Sher Height.
Sher.
Mm. Same yeah. thing.
The Height Report.
Tomatoes. The Height Report, right on. It reported that only 29% of women were able to orgasm through intercourse and 85% were required direct clitoral stimulation in order to orgasm.
Which I think is saying something because it was Freud that said that that penetrative orgasms were a myth.
We all know how much I love Freud.
Well, you know, for those of you that don't know this, he only studied his wife and I think he was actually a bit of an idiot.
I concur yeah. so much. I concur
so anyway, so much. Let's ignore Freud.
Exactly.
And anyway, Cher Height reported that only 29% of women were able to orgasm through intercourse, meaning penetration,
yep.
and 85% of women required direct clitoral stimulation.
Mm-hmm.
And it's bizarre to think that this was groundbreaking information.
But this is, again, all stuff that we know from our own experiences.
We do know now, yeah, and we do Dear
Dolly
talk about
when
it.
We were kids.
And Dear
yeah.
Dolly, I love Dear Dolly. I read into it once. It allowed women, basically with these reports, it allowed women to become aware that not all women were able to orgasm through penetration alone, and it allowed some women to feel that they were within, I guess you could say, the norm, as it was still a taboo subject in the 70s, talking about sex, you know, around the dinner table and stuff like that. The biggest thing about it was it also revealed that the majority of people deemed intercourse or sex to be penetration, and that everything else was put into a category of that's foreplay. So we're talking about oral sex, we're talking
digital,
all yeah. of that kind of stuff. That's considered foreplay. Whereas
by digital, we don't mean like manga or no. you know, hentai.
No.
Thanks for clarifying that one, yeah.
So, yeah, basically there's sex and then everything else is foreplay. So that's what the study came up with. But I believe
which basically discounted sort of lesbians as having sex.
It did. And, you know, look, we're still discounted to a degree. Like, sex should be considered... Sex should not be considered as penetration only.
And we've talked about this on the show before.
We have. We've talked about it in the relationships and stuff like that. Like, how many times have you two been asked by either somebody that's straight or somebody that's curious as to...
Or your own mother.
Or you must use...
in my case.
Not in my instance.
what do you actually do? Is that what you're
yeah,
saying?
What do you do? Yeah. Like, obviously, you must use sex toys in order to have sex because how is it sex if there's no penetration?
Well, I actually have a friend who... went to have a pap smear many, many years ago and was told by the doctor that she didn't need to have a pap smear because she was a lesbian and lesbians don't have penetrative sex.
Oh, see, this really annoys me because there is actually a new test that has come out. This is a little bit of health information for you. As everyone knows, I'm a nurse. There is actually now when you go and get a pap smear, you can actually get a DNA test done with your swab as well. It is actually proven that I think it's 2% of women that suffer from HPV actually have inherited it from their parents.
Oh.
And it's not actually an STD exclusively.
That's really interesting. I actually didn't know that.
Yeah, I found out the last time I went and see my GP.
Did you just say seen?
Seen.
Saw.
Saw.
So what does that say about the vaccine that that we get.
Look, I haven't done enough research into it,
yeah, okay,
to be honest with you. But, yeah, it can be hereditary.
Mm. Anyway.
Anyway, off the subject.
I hate to be boring, but can we just get back to orgasms?
Yeah, sure, of course.
I'd like to talk about...
Let's not talk about sexual health. No.
Yeah, no, nothing about that. Let's talk about the arousal process.
I love the arousal process.
So,
real speech impediment.
Nurse Katie East, what makes us aroused?
Oh, look, I've broken this down into a bit of a medical breakdown for it. Basically, women hit their sexual peak in their late 30s.
Yes.
Right? And you'll be interested to know, I found out this today, another sexual peak actually occurs post-childbirth and after menopause.
Really? Because the assumption is that sort of after menopause, that's it for women.
They're not really worth
anything anymore.
Basically,
well, no.
So
not,
society
not
desexualizes
yeah.
you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you've gone through menopause. But both after childbirth and menopause, these are in fact times when women crave sexual exploration and experimentation.
Yeah, well, that's good to know for women of all ages.
And
Yay.
They can experience some of the most heightened orgasms of their life in those times. Mm.
Oh, and we'll get back to how a bit later.
We will. Don't worry. There's Katie's top 10 tonight. Arousal can occur on a strictly physical level. So you can be physically attracted to somebody and, you know, you get that arousal that you feel, that little tingle. But close connection and trust are two of the biggest things. If you're in a long-term relationship, that is what you need to work on, the close connection and the trust, in order for your relationship to last sexually.
Mm-hmm. Why?
Because we all know about lesbian bed death. Because
lesbian bed death is a myth, I would just like to point out.
We've done a show on that. Read
the relationship podcast. Ruts are not a myth.
That's right. Relationship ruts
whether
are not
you're
a myth.
Straight or gay.
And you'll also find that in a relationship rut, you'll be missing that close connection or that trust issue or something like that. All right, let's get to the medical breakdown because this bit's fun. Okay, so when arousal is heightened, your BP raises by approximately a third.
Your
BP meaning
blood pressure. Sorry. Sorry, I'll break it down. Your blood pressure, which is an indicator like that sex is good for you. It's a wonderful form of exercise and you're getting an all-body workout.
Yay.
Your heart rate can double up to 170 to 180 beats per minute,
is that about equivalent of vigorous exercise?
That's about equivalent of going for a really good run on a treadmill, like having a nice sprint or doing interval training on a treadmill. Your breathing,
this is how I keep in shape.
Your breathing pattern changes and your breathing rates increase.
Yeah.
During arousal, here we go, the blood swells to the female genital erectile tissue.
Okay, sorry, I'm going to stop you there.
All right.
What's female genital erectile tissue?
Okay.
I'm sorry, but we don't generally associate erections with women.
Okay, so erection, the word erection is kind of to go up,
yeah,
right?
Yes, it is.
Right?
So you are correct.
Basically, the tissue that's composed of the inner and outer labia, the clitoris and the perineum, and also the urethral sponge, otherwise known as the G-spot, we'll come back to that.
And the perineum's that the piece of skin between the anus and the vagina.
That's
yeah?
right.
Yep.
Which you can pierce. We'll talk about that on another show. Your breasts swell and your skin becomes very sensitive. So if you think about it, the blood's rushing to this area and you're actually getting a raise in that area.
Mm-hmm.
So, hence, it's female erectile.
Yep.
That's okay. Right.
All right. Well, that makes sense.
You've also got nerve cells on the genitals, and they become excited and activated. I'll talk about having your nerve cells on your clitoris later. As arousal increases, muscles and ligaments begin contracting, resulting in a pleasurable tension, so you feel yourself tense up.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a question for you girls. Have you ever wondered, Farine's going to be really embarrassed by this, but Kat won't be. Have you ever wondered, like, if you are performing oral sex on your partner or you are stimulating?
Thank you. Thank you.
Farine would never do
that. I'm embarrassed. Yes, go on.
Yeah. I don't know if you've ever noticed, but the clitoris actually
disappears.
The more
it goes away.
That's right.
Like, where the hell did it go?
The more aroused the person gets, the more the clitoris hides.
Yep.
Basically, you've got suspensory ligaments, and they shorten, and they pull the glands of the clitoris beneath the hood and back towards the pubic bone.
Just to make life harder.
Why does it do that?
It just does it like that.
That doesn't seem helpful.
Because it isn't hard enough finding it in the first place.
Some of us don't have any problems.
You need a headlight.
At this time, there's also a big outpouring of chemicals and hormones during arousal. We've done that in another show, so look up the podcast. All right, so we're getting to just before you're about to peak or have an orgasm. Your BP is up,
blood pressure,
your pulse is racing, and you're struggling to catch your breath, and then you feel like you might explode.
Mm-hmm.
This is because muscular tension is released, and then it is followed by a series of rhythmical contractions. Do you know where these rhythmical contractions occur, Kat?
Well, I guess it feels like they occur in the walls of the vaginal
Very good.
Canal.
Yeah.
That's good. What it feels Very like. Good.
The walls of the vagina and your pelvic floor will come back to pelvic yes. floor. They contract very strongly and cause increased pleasure. It can
last.
So
is it the tensing that causes that, no. that pleasurable feeling?
Well, basically when you orgasm, it's like a relaxation thing, like you're letting go of everything. So, you know, you've had everything tense really from tense. Having sex. Yeah. You've got your pelvic floor tensed because you're just, yeah. And that's so my only word I've got
you just
for
what?
It.
Yeah.
And then so when you actually do have an orgasm, everything gets released.
It's a relaxing
and that's
way.
The relaxing release that you right. feel.
Mm. That said, I think it's important to mention that orgasms are qualitatively different.
Very much so. And I have that written under important note. Everyone has a different orgasm. Some people might have slight pressure, like slight pleasure. Other people may think it's earth shattering. Some people will go for a couple of seconds. Some people will actually go for a couple of minutes.
Yeah. Wow.
Everybody's different. Mm. And I think that it's really important that if you sit around with your friends and comparing your orgasm stories,
I'm sorry. Who sits around with their friends comparing their orgasm stories? That's why we're doing this show.
Anyway, so,
So this one time I had a really amazing orgasm. No.
All right. So anyway, if you're sitting around with your friends discussing anything to do with sex, if your experience isn't like the person next to you, it doesn't mean that you're not having an orgasm. It just means that you
or
may
that you're
orgasm,
not doing it right.
Or that you're not doing it right. It just means that you may not be doing it. You're not the same, like you're two totally different people. My handy hint for this bit is the more aware of your pelvic floor muscles you are, the more intense your orgasms can be. And this is proven by my physio that I've been to lately. I have a back injury and currently we're working on pelvic floor muscles and had a really good insight with her about pelvic floor muscles. So this is where my handy hint comes from.
Like with her?
No, sexually. Not with her. No, I have okay. a girlfriend.
All right. Inappropriate.
Just checking.
So basically, ladies out there, please do your pelvic floor exercises. I'm doing them now and nobody knew. it not only stops you requiring many teener ladies in the future when you're older, but it will improve your orgasm.
Thank you. And with that, we're going to play some music now. Yeah. But believe me.
Kareen is bright red.
We'll be back with more anatomy lessons in just a sec.
Hi and welcome back to Just Topical. Tonight we are talking about the female orgasm.
Wait, I need to intro that too just so I get to
yeah.
say the word
Do you
orgasm.
Want a point? Yeah, go for it.
I just said it,
yep.
first of all.
Yay!
Go on, do it again
so we're
without
talking,
blushing.
We're talking about the female orgasm
She's
this
blushing.
Evening.
That's four.
And if you want to tell us your stories or you want to get in touch, you can text us at 0427JOY949. You can also Facebook us at Dystopical. That's DYSTOPICAL. We'd love to hear from you. All right, Katie, tell us what we're listening to.
That was You Don't Know Me, which is actually a cover of an Armin van Helden mix. And that was by Lewis Cutter and Mark Hoey, a really nice instrumental acoustic version that I enjoy. Lovely. Kat, let's talk about the clit.
Yes. So the next section, it's we are favorite. Actually going to be talking about the clitoris and also the G-spot.
Yeah.
As one does on this show.
Absolutely. So let's start with the clitoris.
Say clitoris, Farine.
Clitoris.
Yeah.
There we go. Warming into my material. Thank you.
We'd also like to point out that her sister's a prude as well. All right. Over 80% of women require some form of clitoral stimulation. We've already established that.
In order to orgasm.
In order to orgasm. That's according to Kinsey.
And what is the clitoris for?
Basically, it's the only organ on the male or female body that
hang
is...
On. Wait. Men don't have clitoris.
They so. Don't. I could go into a whole thing how the clitoris is actually kind of like a penis, but I'm not going to. I left it out.
It's kind of the same when it comes to nerve endings.
Yeah,
right?
That's right.
Yeah.
But
so imagine something really small.
So it's basically
with the same amount
the only
of nerve
organ.
Endings.
So men don't have an equivalent organ that is only for
sexual pleasure. That's
women
right.
Women do.
Yeah.
So that's special. The only organ.
How lucky are we?
Right.
All right. It's got no other purpose. Can you guess how many nerve endings are in there?
A million.
I know it's thousands.
8,000. Approximately. Up to. That's a lot of nerves going on.
For comparison's sake, like, what is a thumb have, for
I
example?
I don't know. I didn't do comparisons.
Okay. From the amount of time I've spent playing with my thumb, I'm assuming less.
Okay.
Yeah. Although it is very sensitive on the end of your fingers. I used to use that for torture. Anyway, basically, clitoris is different in size and shape, so don't be afraid if yours does not look like your partner's.
Yes.
Yeah, no.
It's an organ that it's not just the best thing about the clitoris, and a lot of people don't know this, is it's not that actual little bit that you can see under the clitoral hood. It actually goes back into your body quite a long way.
Mm. Kind of like an iceberg.
Kind of like it is just the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah,
it's kind of an iceberg with two open legs, I guess you could say, because basically it goes back in your body and it has an internal shaft that divides into two parts and then...
Oh, sorry, I'm doing a thing with my fingers that
she is.
People,
she's drawing.
It runs around the outside of the vaginal opening, doesn't it?
The labia, yeah. It goes down it extends down both sides of the labia.
Mm-hmm.
So basically.
And is this also made up of erectile tissue?
That's right, and that's the best thing about it. So if you are, say, circling the vagina, you are actually stimulating the erectile tissue and you will get a response from the clitoris, and you'll find that the blood rushes to the clitoris in that area because it is the same erectile tissue.
Right.
Interesting fact there.
Mm-hmm.
That's why so many things feel so good.
This is very true. We could talk about kissing and cuddling feeling that you get after you've had an orgasm. But
oxytocin.
Cat's favorite drug. Basically, you get a sleep... A post-orgasm sleep chemical, and they're released.
It's a cuddle drug.
It is. They're released really slowly and gradually in women, and so you feel like cuddling. You feel a bit lovey-dovey and stuff like that.
I mean, I don't.
Is that different
I've heard
from
that other
how they're released
do.
In men?
Yeah, men have a very quick. They're released very quickly, and that's why in heterosexual sex, a lot of people complain that a man just rolls over and falls asleep, whereas it's a very gradual process in women where it's released very slowly. And it also means that women can be highly aroused straight away after an orgasm.
Mm.
Like, women have the ability to just keep going and going and going.
Because you feel really connected. It's a kind of chemical that makes you feel connected to someone
else. That's right.
It's like a positive cycle almost.
Yeah, it is.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That's why, like, you know, some heterosexual people go, oh my God, you had sex for like 9 hours? And women are like, yeah, when they've had lesbian sex.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
Sorry, what?
I've had sex for 9 hours.
Okay, thank you.
Anyway, history of the G-spot. This is really interesting. I find the G-spot really interesting because have you ever wondered why it's called the G-spot?
I actually know why it's called the G-spot because I've read about this before.
Yeah.
Yeah, I want to hear it. Go on.
Okay, so we know about Kinsey. And he did his research. But at the same time, there was actually a German obstetrician and gynecologist called Ernst Grafenberg.
Nice accent.
Thank you. I liked that.
Nice.
He documented that for a woman, a zone of erogenous feeling was located along, I could say the technical term, which is suburethral surface of the anterior vaginal wall.
But that means very little to a lot of us.
Or I could just say inside the vagina close
at
to your
front,
stomach.
Yeah.
At the front. I'll just break it down for you. His studies failed to spark any interest. Like, Kinsey had all this interest in his studies, and Grafenberg actually had hardly any. But later on, there
might
was
have been also the milieu in which he was doing research in Germany.
Well,
maybe they were, you know, preoccupied with other things.
This is very true. But there was a sexologist and a nurse, John Perry and Beverly Whipple, and I've had the pleasure of listening to a lecture from Beverly Whipple. She's amazing. They published studies which documented areas of specific vaginal sensitivity, which was really important at the time. The G-spot became officially recognised, and out of regard, because Grafenberg actually found it, literally, they've named it.
How did he find it?
The G-spot. I don't want to go into how he found it.
So you told us where it is.
Okay, so, yeah, it's the anterior or front wall of the vagina, so up and closest to your belly.
Mm-hmm.
It's about tissue.
About, I'd say, 4 inches?
Not even.
Three?
It actually depends on anybody. There is actually, I saw a picture today of a woman who could do a pelvic floor muscle and actually push her G-spot outside of her vagina so you could actually see the spongy tissue that it's made up of.
Okay, that's actually gross.
That's amazing.
So it is spongy-like tissue. It has a really different texture to the actual rest of the vagina, so you will actually be able to feel it. And you'll feel it swelling and becoming more sensitive during arousal. It
feels kind of like, I would say, like...
a sponge.
Well, no, I'd say like a bean, like a broad bean.
Really?
Yeah, it's like beanish shaped.
Yeah, no. I don't have the same opinion, but okay, that's so what Dystopical is all about.
Maybe people have different shapes.
Everybody actually does have a different shaped G-spot, okay. And it can be in a slightly different position. Mm-hmm. It can be over or up or down.
But it is on the front wall.
It is on the front wall, that's right. Basically, the G-spot for women becomes more sensitive and swollen during arousal. And I would initially recommend if you were going to stimulate the G-spot to do it with one finger to start off with and then gradually work your way up from there. Mm-hmm.
And I believe you can also do it yourself.
You can. You can. You can do it in a squat or you can do it. The best position is is with your knees raised towards your shoulders. And it actually opens up the
chest.
Yeah, yeah. It actually opens up the vaginal cavity and you can actually have a better feel of your G-spot.
Excellent.
And I'm just going to go the whole way. There are obviously other ways that you can achieve this.
Look, we could put it out there
to
that
do lying on your stomach with hips raised.
You can lie fisting on your stomach with your legs apart, and there is also fisting. Some people are into penetrative sex. Some people aren't into penetrative sex. Some people are into fisting. Some people aren't into fisting. Some people get that full senseness. It's actually a chemical release, and it can be a psychological thing of when your G-spot's actually aroused, you can feel like you need to have something inside of you. And for some people, it can be something small that they crave. And for other people, it can be something humongous they crave.
Yeah. And it's certainly something that's generally stimulated better by firm pressure.
Yes.
Yes.
Once you've worked it up, start off quite slowly first is my hint if this is a new experience for you. If you know what you're doing, get right in there. But if it is a new thing that
they know what you're doing,
yeah, if it's a new thing between you and your partner that you're exploring, then, you know, take it nice and slow and always use lube.
And I actually think that this, okay, sometimes it's really awkward to bring this stuff up, but I think that this would be a really great time to bring up the feeling like you need to pee during sex thing.
Oh, yes. Well, we're actually going to get to that. That's called female ejaculation, and we've got a bit of time to do that.
to do a female ejaculation.
Yeah, we're going to go to a song first, I believe. We're going to go to Sexy Back by Justin Timberlake.
All right, welcome back. This is Dystopical. So, Katie, we're talking about the female orgasm this evening.
Five for you.
Thank you, bumping.
You're doing really well.
All right, so this is the part of the evening when we get to our sort of agony aunt section, Dear Dystopical.
Which is usually Farine's favourite part of the show.
Usually my favourite part of the show, but
tonight it is not.
I am positively squirming in my seat. Here is
we've
our
actually
question.
Edited it for you so that you can read it.
All right. Sometimes when I'm having sex with my partner, I feel like I need to pee. What is this?
All right.
Oh, my God. I just have to say that I'm so glad that we are talking about this.
Well, I think it's something that really needs to be advertised and educated to people because a lot of people don't talk about it and it does happen and I'm going to talk about it now.
Great.
Female ejaculation, it is possible. You are not peeing yourself.
You are not peeing yourself.
You are not peeing yourself.
It is
but
the truth.
But it really does feel like it. Or it
can.
Feel,
yeah. It can, and I'll explain why.
And other people may think that that is what
and
it is.
And other people will say, oh, my God, you just peed yourself.
Now, are we talking about, like, huge amounts of liquid here? Are we talking
Look,
about
I've done a lot of research into this. It can actually go up to 2 cups in one ejaculation.
That's a lot.
That is a lot of fluid. So basically, I think it's really important that we talk about some of the facts while we progress on this topic.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I'm not sure if everybody out there knows, but during early fetal development, so when you're a little bubba in your mummy's tummy, male and female fetuses start out being physically female. Okay.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's an interesting little fact.
Everyone starts out a girl.
basically, this does not change until a male fetus begins to produce its own hormones, which is around the 8th week of gestation. Only then does physical development of the male and female bodies diverge, and then less than many may presume. This necessitates the female fetuses initially to have structures that could develop into either male or female reproductive or sexual organs. This means that tissues that develop into the male prostate gland, the urogenital sinus, must also be present in women. So basically, women have a prostate gland as well.
Huh.
A lot of people don't know this.
I actually didn't. I like to think I know everything. But,
I love bringing medical stuff to the show.
But I didn't know that.
You're just like, wow.
Yeah.
Amazing.
So basically, the female prostate was discovered in Western medical literature in 1672. I won't go into the details of it, but basically it was discovered
then.
Wow,
that's amazing, because they still weren't convinced that the Earth revolved around the sun then.
Pretty much. So 1672 it came about by Rena de Graaf, and then it wasn't until Western medicine actually fully accepted the concept in 2001 when the Federative Committee...
2001?
Yeah.
Okay, so
it went
like
missing for so
gap.
Many years. Yeah.
Where's the female prostate?
Okay, so the Committee on Anatomical Terminology agreed to use this term, and the following edition of Histology Terminology, which is a very big medical textbook, for those of you who don't know, actually put in the female prostate.
In 2001.
In 2001.
That's ridiculous.
So, to give you a rough breakdown, the urethra is inside the just at the top of the vagina. You've got the clitoris above
the top of the vaginal canal.
Vaginal canal. The urethra is where urine comes out. Around that, on the inside of the urethra, around the outside of that, traveling up to the bladder, mm-hmm. there's a small amount of tissue, and that's actually where the female prostate is.
Right.
Just so everybody knows.
And this is what causes women to ejaculate.
It is. Okay, so
it's what, not a myth.
It's
you're
not,
not
a
wetting
myth.
Yourself.
You're not wetting yourself. You're not peeing. It is real. So what is female ejaculate? Female ejaculate is a fluid that is expelled from the body through the urethra during sexual activities. It's released in small quantities but can sometimes be large, as I said, up to 2 cups.
That doesn't sound like that much.
I don't really like using this word because it kind of puts you off it, but I'll explain it in a minute. It can be like a mucus, like fluid, having a clear, milky or yellowish coloration, which isn't really appealing. But as the volume of the expelled fluid increases, it becomes like clear water, and in small quantities it may have a distinct scent that is musky or pungent, but when actually the fluid increases in volume, the scent goes away.
It just goes away.
Yeah, there's no longer a detectable scent. Right. There's been so much study done into this. They've actually taken samples of women's ejaculate and they've studied it. I think it's really important at this stage.
I'd love to know how they go about doing these studies.
Look, I read a lot about it today and I won't go into the specifics of it. But
I actually did some research once into
how to squirt.
I didn't actually ever have to research that. how to make it happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there are particular
If you can't do
ways.
It, you can actually train yourself
yeah, you
to,
can
do
learn
it.
To do it.
It is
yep.
possible. As I said, because everybody has a prostate that creates that fluid. Sometimes when you're having sex and you're quite well lubricated, you may not notice that you have actually ejaculated a little bit because mm-hmm. it gets mixed up in the lube fluid.
But it's that feeling like you need to pee that you know
that's, right.
that's what's happening.
Then. Yeah, you've got to work through that feeling of needing to pee, and then once you work through that, that stops a lot of women from orgasming. But once you work through that, you'll actually find that you'll have a fantastic orgasm, and you may actually, the word that most people use, not ejaculation, is squirt.
It's a cute word.
It is. I like the word squirt. Just on a note, it's safe for a person to taste their own ejaculate. And for couples who already exchanged bodily fluids and have been tested or in a safe, secure relationship where no cheating is going on. However, especially for lesbians out there, it's important for you to know, couples needing to practice safe sex must be wary of this.
Okay. I want to ask you a question.
Go.
All right. Just because so many times over
I'm
the years,
blushing already.
I've heard people, you know, think that it is, you know.
Urine. Yep.
Urinating. So when we're talking about female ejaculate or squirting, What actually is it? What is it?
All right, I'm just going to break it down. I'm going to be medical about this. I'm not going to break it down any further. If you want to know about it, look it up. It contains no urine. Oh, it can contain some urine in small doses, but generally speaking, it doesn't. It contains prostate-specific antigen, or known as PSA, prostatic acidic phosphatase, prostate-specific acid phosphatase, glucose, creatinine, potassium, sodium, and chloride. Look, if I break it down, it's
salt
actually...
salt and sugar.
Salt and sugar. It's kind of like one of those icy poles that you get when you're dehydrated. Yeah. Basically, it's good for you.
Why does your body do this?
Why?
Yeah.
Because the stimulation of the G-spot then stimulates the prostate gland, and the prostate basically just starts secreting.
But what benefit does it have? Like, we know when males ejaculate, there's, you know, there's benefits to that, there's the sperm, but why is it a benefit, biologically speaking, for women to do this?
Basically, it's not a benefit because not everybody does it, although you can be trained to do it. The study that I read that I got that information off of what's actually in the ejaculate, basically it compared male sperm and female ejaculate, and the only thing missing
is a sperm.
Basically. Yeah.
So is this perhaps a byproduct of the fact that we all start out as really genetically similar?
Yes.
So we have similar processes.
That's it.
And at the end of the day, when you turn into whatever gender you turn into, one contributes to the continuation of the species and the other one's just a leftover.
Squirt.
Very interesting. All right, so now...
Way to sell laundry detergent.
All right, so fascinating. Thank you for asking.
Put a towel down is my hint.
We have got to get to your list. Time's running out, so let's get to your list.
All right, so basically every time that I'm on, I do a list of stuff. So here's my list.
What's this list about?
This list is just about sex and bringing someone to an orgasm and stuff like that. Number one, take your lady off the clock. Basically what it means, I'm just going to break it down really simply. Sometimes it can take women 15 to 40 minutes to be stimulated and then to reach orgasm. So take her off the clock. Make sure that there's no stress on there. Make sure that there's no time limit on there. Make sure that you're able to tell her, we've got as much time as we need to do this, so let's just take our time. Number two, talent. Talent can be a real turn on. Like, the best sex basically starts long before you take your clothes off. Mm-hmm. You go on a really cool date. You make them laugh their ass off. Am I allowed to say ass? Sorry.
Yes,
make them laugh their butt off. Sorry. that can be a really big talent. And, you know, show certain sides of you or things that you're talented at before you actually take your clothes off and then show her your real talents. Speak up about the body. If you're attracted to somebody that you're sleeping with and you're attracted to them naked as well, you need to be able to tell them, because when you give them flattery about how they look naked and how they look, basically you're going to get better sex. A recent study in the Journal of Sex suggested women who feel embarrassed or ashamed about their bodies have less sexual experience and are less sexually assertive. Want them to be assertive? Give them some complimentary tips.
Nice.
The top should be tender. I like this one. During foreplay, gently brush the tops, bottoms and sides of the breast. The nipples are actually in some way connected to the clitoris. So be very careful around them, but the outside areas are really hypersensitive. The nipple itself can actually become desensitized. So make sure you work on the outside areas.
Mm. You have to kind of work up to nipples.
Really. You do. Yeah. You can't just start off at the nip. Watch and learn. This is a really big one. I'm not going to say my favorite one.
This is my favorite.
I almost said it.
I actually think this is a really important one.
I think it's really important. Let your partner masturbate in front of you. Not only is it a turn on, it's a guide of what she likes and how she likes it. Don't just sit there taking notes in a notepad, but make sure you look, feel, and see what she responds to. This is my most important thing. In our society, women are not encouraged to masturbate. However, by exploring what it is you like, you're able to have a more fulfilling sex life with your partner. Masturbation should be viewed as empowering.
Absolutely. And clitorises aren't the same. Like, some people like direct stimulation, some people like indirect stimulation.
Yep.
It really just depends on the person. And
that's
so
right.
Knowing what gets them off by seeing what they do can be a really important
Whatever
part
worked
of
on
process.
Your last girlfriend isn't necessarily going to work on your next
Absolutely.
One.
Absolutely.
Yep. Okay, angles for penetration, if we're talking about penetrative sex. Explore various types of penetration to figure out what turns her on most.
If she likes it.
If she actually likes it. We've talked about where the G-spot is, so I'm not really going to go into
that
anymore.
We didn't talk about the A-spot, but maybe another time.
Maybe another time. We have an A-spot, everybody. Basically, the A-spot produces lube. women being able to multitask. Women are meant to be able to concentrate on more than one thing, so make sure that that's also evident in the bedroom. Don't get stuck on missionary sex. Have some fun experimenting. Sense of orgasm. Ease into oral sex. Don't just attack it. First, you know, I'm not going to tell you how to do it, but kiss the thighs, you know, broad strokes with your tongue, do circles, yada, yada, yada. But the biggest cues are from the hips because they show the rhythm that the person likes, and gasps and moans as you experiment with techniques. And watch for signs.
Stomach muscles.
Yeah, that's it. The stomach muscles can actually show when they're having an orgasm, so make sure you have the hand on the stomach. That's also a really good tip. And if the lights are on, you can see the color of you can see the increased blood flow in the labia when they're about to come. Coming together, it's an amazing moment to share with someone, so try and time yours with your partner's climax. Don't be afraid to keep going and enjoy the thrill of the multiple. It is real and it does exist.
Just keep going.
And don't forget, if the clitoris is rubbed for a long time, it can become sore or desensitized to respond to manual oral stimulation. Bonus point here, though.
I like the bonus
point. Bonus. A woman's orgasm threshold drops after her first one, so it's really easy to bring her back to climax through penetration after she's already had one if she's into penetration. And that is my top 10, and that is the orgasm show.
Woohoo! All right. Thank you very much. So this has been great, Katie.
It has.
Very, very informative.
You managed to make Farine blush for a whole
hour. For a whole
My
hour.
Cheeks have been flushed this whole time. All right, so on next week's show, we're talking about marriage equality to Ali Hogg. So, and stick around for TJ and Keza with White Noise next.
We're going to finish off with the song?
Yes, we are.
We're going to finish off with Let's Go Home by Paris Wells. Baby, I'll see you soon.
All right, thanks so much.
To find out more about Joy 94.9, check out joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.